Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on eminent domain and takings cases right after this. You know, in real estate transactions, we follow these three rules. It's called location, location, location. Well, in criminal law, we follow three rules also when we're talking to the police or government agents. And that is, don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. Knowing what to say and when to say it and what not to say and who not to say it to is summed up in this maxim of law, and that is that all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And that's why judges, in their opinions, oftentimes make short terse statements like these. Now listen to this first judge. He said, "Who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights?" He said that in U.S. versus Dickerson. Now, if I said something like that, I'd be accused of being a tax protester. Listen to the second judge. He said, "You can and must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment." He said that in Belknap versus United States. If I said something like that, I'd be accused of obstructing justice. Now, listen to what this third judge had to say on the subject. He said, "The constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and the farsighted." And he said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, for more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative, and it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. You want to do it right now before you forget. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about eminent domain. Eminent domain then leads to a government taking of property protected by the Fifth Amendment. Oftentimes we read in the Reader's Digest an article in That's Outrageous about some government action that has taken place, and it shocks the conscience. Well, listen, colleges sell degrees. That's their business in life. And in the case that we've been discussing this week, which deals with a taking, an inverse condemnation, remember, it's the panther comes in and eats this guy's goats down in Florida, and he just doesn't know what to do about it. He knows it's wrong. He knows the government should pay him for his goats, and then the government, that is the government agents, come along and charge him with a crime. They charged him with cruelty to animals. Now, what's going on here? Well, you need to understand that government sells dependence. Government doesn't sell independence. Government sells dependence. As long as you're dependent upon the government and the government agents have something to do. It justifies their existence. It makes employment for government agents. Now, remember, we've been talking about the biologic agent. That's the wildlife biologist. You know, 100 years ago, we didn't have things called wildlife biologists. They were as useless as tits on a boar hog. Today, they're indispensable. We have to have wildlife biologists, and that's because society has changed. You see, 100 years ago, your great-great-granddad came out, claimed a piece of land. He needed to kill off all of the predators so that he could raise livestock. Today, we all live in the cities. We don't raise livestock out in the range. We raise it in factory farms, and we no longer are concerned about predators. We want to restore those predators, the wolves, the mountain lions, the grizzly bears. We want to restore those to their natural habitat. Unfortunately, there are still a bunch of people out there that still own some of that property, and they are claiming their property rights. And so when the government wants to restore wolves to their natural environment, they have to hire paid professionals to do that. And the colleges and universities have turned those out. They're called wildlife biologists. They work for the government. They're parasites like ticks on a dog's ear. They produce nothing and consume much, but that's what the public wants to buy. Since the public, the taxpayers, want to buy that service, the government wants to provide it, and it makes employment for wildlife biologists and fish and game people and conservation agents and highway patrolmen and all these safety features that everybody seems to want. And in the process, sometimes people get trampled on. So you need to understand that government doesn't speak with one voice. Government speaks with many voices. And that's because the government is made up of a bureaucracy, and the bureaucracy is made up of people. Those people have independent religious, political, and philosophical thoughts. You can have one wildlife biologist who is a Republican, a conservative. A next one is a rabid, greeny, liberal, radical. You don't know who you're going to deal with. And these people have power. They have the police power of the state, and they use it in varying and different ways. Sometimes they use it to harm people, sometimes they use it to do good. In this case, they used it to do harm. You, as a citizen, have to be prepared to deal with these government agents, whether it's the IRS agent, the FBI agent, the Fish and Wildlife Conservation agent, the biologist, whoever this government agent is, you have to be prepared to deal with it. And there are rules that we follow to deal with these people. Now, I told you I was going to tell you a story this session about a fellow out in the West that had this very same thing happen to him. His name is Wayne Hage. Wayne Hage had a very similar problem that the Sheelys have that Henry Lamb is reporting to us through WorldNet Daily. Here's the essentials of what happened to Hage. Wayne Hage is a cattle rancher. He had a cattle ranch in California. An opportunity came up out in central Nevada to buy a big ranch. And the big ranch, that's 1,100 sections, 1,100 square miles, about the same size as the state of Rhode Island. In fact, it surrounds Tonopah, Nevada on three sides. And from his ranch house, it is 68 miles to the post office in Tonopah, Nevada, and he never leaves his ranch, driving from the ranch house to the post office. Well, except when he gets to the city limits. That's not his ground. Now, back in 1866, in the olden days, when the government wanted to settle Nevada, the government came up with some legislation. And the predecessors and interest to this Hage Ranch, which is called the Pine Creek Ranch, got the water rights on this piece of real estate. And when he bought it, he bought the water rights. Now, this is called public land. The truth of the matter is that its real status is split estate lands. That is, you see, under the Water Rights Act of 1866, Hage owns the water, but he doesn't own the rock, the mineral, or the dirt. It's kind of like having a mining claim. You go in and you file for a mining claim. You own the gold that comes out of the ground, but you don't own the ground that the gold comes out of. It's called a split estate, and it's regulated. Now, Hage doesn't own that 1,100 square miles, but he has a right to forage his cattle on it. He owns the water, so he uses the water by use of the cattle. The cattle eat the forage and drink the water. Now, the government wants to drive all these ranchers. Now, this has been going on since 1866. Around 1950 to 60 to 70, the government came up with a new policy. They said, we want to take all of that land out there, and we want to remove those cattle ranchers from it. Unfortunately, those cattle ranchers have certain rights. So they began a policy of intimidation and harassment. These are the government agents. This is the Bureau of Land Management. This is the Forest Service. Now, remember, the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, those are institutions created by government. They're staffed and manned by Americans. They're not communists, they're not Russians, they're not Chinese, those are Americans, and they take jobs with the government. And somebody in the upper echelons of government comes up with a new concept, and they say, let's drive all of the cattle ranchers off of this land so that we can return the buffalo, so that we can return this land to the grizzly bears, the wolves, and the coyotes. Now, you may say, well, that's a crazy policy. It doesn't make any difference whether it's crazy or whether it's a good policy or bad policy. It's the policy of the United States of America. And that's the way the game is played. So Wayne Hage bought this ranch in 1978, and within a very short period of time, I don't remember who it was, but it was the BLM or the Forest Service, some government agency came out and offered to buy it from him. And they offered to pay him less than he paid for it. And he didn't think that was very intelligent, so he told him so. He said, look, I paid $1 million, and I want to sell it for two. It's for sale. You know, it's just a piece of property, and if I can make a profit on it, I'll sell it to you. And they said, no, we're gonna buy it for our price, and if you don't sell it to us at our price, then we're just going to drive you off of it. And so they began a policy of intimidation against him. And there were numerous instances, but one of them was that they charged him with trespass. Another one was they charged him with destroying government property. Let me give you an illustration. He's got his cattle out here on the range, and he owns the forage. He doesn't own the rock, mineral, and dirt. The government calls this public land. Hage calls it split estate. So they wrote him a ticket and said, "Well, you got to have a permit." Now, he didn't have a grazing permit. He doesn't need a grazing permit. After all, it's his land. He has a right to be there. If you want to use public land, you have to have a permit. So when I go, for instance, when I go into a public park, the ranger says to me, "Pay me a certain amount of money to use this public park." And so I pay him, and he gives me a receipt, and I can park my camper, or I can go picnic, or I can hike and do whatever I want to do on this public land. That's public land. Split estate land is like a mining claim. You don't own the rock, mineral, and dirt, but you do have a right to be there, and you do have a right to conduct mining operations and so on. Hage owns the water on this public land, this alleged public land. It's now a split estate because public land is land that nobody else has a claim on. Split estate is where somebody else has a claim. So when a miner has a claim on a piece of land, that's no longer public land. It's now a mining claim. It's a split estate. Now, Wayne Hage wrote a book called Storm Over Rangelands, Private Rights and Federal Lands. And you can get a copy of the book if you're interested in this subject matter of takings, because Hage won a very significant takings case over this Pine Creek Ranch, and I'm going to describe that in greater detail. Called Storm Over Rangelands, Hage, H-A-G-E, is the author, published by Free Enterprise Press. I think you can probably get it at Barnes & Noble. Now, that's about 200 pages, isn't it? 263 pages. And it'll tell you the story about eminent domain and takings that's going on right now all over the West. And many people out there, like the Sheelys, are being raped, robbed, and pillaged by these government institutions and agencies over this government policy. Hageism. Hage is getting paid. But Hage handled the circumstance a little differently than the Sheelys that we're discussing here this week. He filed a takings claim in the U.S. Court of Claims. And here's the way this came down. After suffering a number of harassing incidents, in which in one case he was charged criminally and had to go defend, they prosecuted him criminally and convicted him, and he had to take it up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in order to have that conviction overturned. Now, that's harassment. When the government's writing you tickets and harassing you, then they're taking your property. They're taking a right. Now, property is more than a thing. If I ask you, what is this desk that you're sitting at? Well, that's property. But you know, you don't have to own the physical property to have a property right in that property. For instance, your right to travel on a public right-of-way is a property right. So if the government were to take that right away from you, while you don't own the asphalt, you don't own the right-of-way, you don't own the road, you certainly have a right to use the road, to walk on, ride your bicycle on, or to ride your horse on. And if the government were to prohibit you from doing that, that would be an inverse condemnation. Well, Hage had some ditches, and these ditches have water that runs down them to water his stock and irrigate his land. And some of this land is patented land, and some of this land out here is split estate land. And he was clearing the trees around the ditches, and the ranger came out and gave him a ticket, arrested him, hauled him off to jail, and prosecuted him. And Hage learned a very valuable lesson as it relates to pleadings, and that is that when you plead not guilty, see, the government came in and said, you're trespassing on public land. He pled not guilty, went into federal district court, U.S. district court. And he said, well, I'm not trespassing. I'm standing on my ground. And you see, the U.S. district court doesn't listen to a property claim. It's there to listen to a tort claim. And Hage was charged with a tort, a criminal act. Now, that's very important, and I explained that, and that's why pleading is so important, because he walked in, he pled not guilty. From that point on, he couldn't win. You see, Hage came in and said, well, let me prove to you that I own that land, and the presumption is that it's public land, the presumption is the government owns it, and the presumption is that you're trespassing. You have to come in here and prove that you're not trespassing. So once he was convicted, he said, you know, I think I got to take a different tact. So he wrote up a claim. He said, okay, look. The government has a right to take the Pine Creek Ranch. If the government wants to take the Pine Creek Ranch and build an Air Force base there, they certainly have a right and a need to do that. After all, the Air Force has military bases all over the United States, do they not? And at some time before they had the military base, somebody owned that land. And so the government came in and they condemned the land, paid to the owners, and then they left and they built an Air Force base or an Army base. So Hage, rather than argue over who owns this land, he said, look, the government has a right to take this land for public use. If they want to take this land and all of the water that's on it, which is what the government's real move is in the West, see, they want to take the water. Las Vegas needs the water. Cities and towns and urban areas need this water more than these ranchers need water for their cattle. The ranchers got in there first in 1866 through about 1900 and made all these claims on the water out in the West, and they own the water. And of course, all that land out there is useless without the water. So the ranchers own the most valuable resource out there. It's the water. Hage doesn't claim that he owns the gold that's in the ground. He doesn't claim to own the gravel, the rock, the mineral of the earth. He just says, I've got a right to my water. I own that. And the government owns the rock, the mineral, and the earth, and my cattle have a right to that forage out there because it's a split estate, and that was the intent of Congress in 1866. And the government now wants to take that back. They want to take the water and the forage back. They don't want me to use this land out here any longer for grazing cattle. They want to use this land out here for some other public purpose. So he went to the U.S. District, the U.S. Court of Claims, and he filed an action. He said, look, the government is harassing me. They're coming out here and giving me tickets. They're arresting me. They're jailing me. They're charging me with trespass and all these criminal actions. I can't conduct my cattle ranching business. So he said, pay me $40 million. That's what my water, my cattle, my business, and everything is worth. Pay me $40 million. And the case went through the Court of Claims. It started about 1980, and it has been running, I don't know, 15 years. Something like that. It's been running a number of years. I don't know exactly when he sued him, but I say 1980, that'd be 25 years. Maybe it was 1988 or something like that. And he said, what I need here is compensation for my land. I need to be compensated. So the U.S. Court of Claims, I think it was last May, about a year ago, came back and said, yes, Mr. Hage, you have had a taking. You have suffered an inverse condemnation taking. We don't know how much that's worth. And so some time back, they had an evidentiary hearing to determine the value of it, and the judge hasn't determined how much the damage is, but so far they've determined that yes, there is a damage. Now, in the case of the Sheelys here, let me just divert back to Mr. Sheely. Mr. Sheely needs to understand that the government wants to take his petting zoo, wants to take his petting park. It's out in the Everglades wilderness or the Everglades swamp, and the government wants it. Government agents want to take it, and they don't want to pay him the fair market value. They didn't want to pay Hage the fair market value for the ranch. They wanted to take it for nothing or very little. Now, don't ask me why the government does that. I'm just reporting to you the facts. That's what they've done, and that's what they're doing here to Mr. Sheely. Now, Henry Lamb comes in, and remember that Lamb now is connected with the Ecologic Powerhouse, which is a news magazine. It's a little magazine dedicated to this thing of private property. And remember, he belongs to... See if I can give you the organization here. It's on page 3. I want to give him a plug here. Henry Lamb is the Executive Vice President of the Environmental Conservation Organization and Chairman of Sovereignty International. Well, this organization called Environmental Conservation Organization puts out this Ecologic Powerhouse. So let me tell you how to get a copy of that or to subscribe to it. It's called the Ecologic Powerhouse, 1200 North White Sands Boulevard, Suite 110. Alamogordo, New Mexico, 88310. That's Alamogordo, New Mexico, the zip code 88310. That's the Ecologic Powerhouse, 1200 North White Sands Boulevard, Suite 110, Alamogordo, New Mexico, 88310. Now, their thing in life, what they're trying to accomplish in life, is to get the government off the backs of private property owners. Private property owners. If you're a private property owner, this Ecologic Powerhouse is a must for you. It's a must subscription, so that you can learn how to defend your private property against government incursion. Now, you have a constitutional right to the property, but when the government comes in under the Fifth Amendment, they have a right to take it. It's called eminent domain, but they have to pay for it, and you're entitled to full fair market value. Full fair market value. So Mr. Sheely is entitled to full fair market value for his property. Now, the normal way for the government would be to come out there and say, look, Mr. Sheely, we want to take your petting zoo for public purposes. We need the water, we need the land, we need everything here so that we can use those resources to supply the people of Miami, Florida with water and sewage and all of the things that those people need. And then if Mr. Sheely said, no, I don't care about the 2 or 3 or 5 million people other than Miami. I only care about me. To hell with the people in Miami. They can't have my water. They can't have my land for public purposes. Well, then in that case, Mr. Sheely, we're going to have to throw your ass off. See how that works? But Mr. Sheely is entitled to full fair market value for that property. Now, if it's worth $1 million, he should be paid $1 million. If it's worth $500,000, he should be paid $500,000. Now, Wayne Hage, we'll shift back again to Wayne Hage. He took a little different tactic than the Sheelys and Henry Lamb. Over this issue of eminent domain, over this issue of property and panthers and et cetera. You see, the government is using the panther to take Mr. Sheely's goats in the same way that the government was using the harassing tactics of charging Wayne Hage with a crime of trespassing when he was cleaning out his ditch. It was an inverse condemnation. It makes it unprofitable for him to utilize his private property. That is a taking. You don't have to take the physical property. You don't have to take the goat. You just have to make the circumstances surrounding the petting zoo untenable, unprofitable, unusable. The same thing applies when the government comes in and says, you can't build on this property because the snail darter is here or because there's an endangered species. That's an inverse condemnation. And people don't have a clue as to what they can do about that. Which is why I thought I'd take a little time here and explain to you the way the law works and how this game is being played. Now, there's another side to this. There's a political side. And up in, I forgot now where it was, I think it was in Cleveland, Ohio, the city, in some little town here, some little city, decided that they wanted to condemn a neighborhood that had a pretty good view of the river. It was an old neighborhood, but it was a viable. It wasn't a slum property, but the city said, we're going to take that and we're going to put a Walmart in and shopping centers and we'll get more tax revenue. And the local people there, the homeowners, they didn't want the city to take their property. Now, I take the opposite view. I subscribe to the view the government can take your property for whatever reason they want, or for that matter, for no reason whatever. No reason at all. Now, that's not popular, and I'm sure that people that have property take the view that no, the government can only take this property for schools and highways and forts, arsenals, docks, and other needful buildings. And okay, maybe that's true. Maybe the legislature needs to enact some statutes over here. I don't want to get into the politics of it. I'm just telling you that in my view, I don't care if they take my property and build a school on it, it's gone. I don't care if they build a freeway on it, it's gone. I don't care if they take it and build a Walmart on it, my property is gone. Damn it, pay me for it. I don't care whether the government comes out and confiscates my goat and feeds soldiers in Iraq with it, or they turn a panther loose in the forest and the panther comes over and eats my goat. In either case, my goat is gone and I've lost my property. Damn it, pay me for it. Now that's my position. And Wayne Hage took that position and he said, okay, if the government wants my water for Las Vegas, if the government wants my land for some other purpose, pay me for it. And the way you succeed at that is a takings action in the Court of Claims. A takings action is a separate action from any criminal action that you'll be making or taking or defending against in your local courts. Now that's the way that game is played. That's the way you succeed if you want to get paid. Now, if you just want to make a lot of noise and you want to make a political statement, well, now that's another story. I'm not opposed to people that want to make political statements. People do that all the time over taxes, and they march up and down in front of the IRS buildings or federal buildings, and they don't pay their taxes, and then they write and they print and they do all kinds of things over here. It hasn't done anything to the income tax. It's gotten a lot of people into trouble, got a lot of people put in jail, but it hasn't accomplished anything. All right, now I'm going to give you this promotion one more time. Now, this is called the Ecologic Powerhouse. Ecologic Powerhouse. And you can subscribe to it by writing to 1200 North White Sands Boulevard, Suite 110, Alamogordo, New Mexico, 88310. Once more, that's the Ecologic Powerhouse, 1200 North White Sands Boulevard, Suite 110, Alamogordo, New Mexico, 88310. Now, you can also get onto their webpage. Let me see if I can flip over here and find their webpage. Found it for you yesterday. I think it was Powerhouse or something here. Yeah, it says... Well, I can't find it. Here we go. www.eco.freedom.org/EL/. I'll give you that once more. That's www.eco.freedom.org/EL/. Well, that's our webpage. Their email is freedom@freedom.org. That's freedom@freedom.org. They got a phone here. Let me give you the phone number, too. It's 505-434-3195. Again, that's area code 505. The number is 434-3195. Now, I subscribe here to the Ecologic Powerhouse, and I promote it, and I do stories and articles and reviews on the Ecologic Powerhouse. If you're a private property owner, hell, even if you don't own private property, you might someday. And you might want to be connected with other private property owners that have the same kinds of concerns and the same kind of mental and political philosophy. Storm Over Rangelands will give you the inside story. This is probably the best book that I've seen over this Western sagebrush rebellion, Western lands, Western water rights, and so on, called Storm Over Rangelands, Private Rights on Federal or in Federal Lands, Private Rights in Federal Lands. Wayne Hage, the name is spelled H-A-G-E, published by Free Enterprise Press. Okay? Couple of musts there. All right, now I've got to give you the midway break over here, give you a couple of caveats. And we'll come right back and we'll talk more about this thing of takings. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Free introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. In addition, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page at the website georgegordon.org. Again, that's the homeschooling page on the website georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective 7 days a week. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the law school direct 417-273-4967. All right, now when we're talking about takings, one of the most common forms of taking is called the inverse condemnation. It's an odd term, odd phrase, inverse condemnation. We talked about a direct condemnation. That's where we just come out, make an offer on your land. We come out and threaten and take your land, or we just come out here with a court order, court action, and we confiscate your land and we pay you for it. But there's another way to confiscate property that's very common. The government doesn't want to pay for all the property that they want to steal, that they want to take. I shouldn't say steal, I guess I should say take. And that's because agency budgets don't have enough money in them to pay for all that land. In other words, they're kind of like a fat man at a smorgasbord. He wants to put more on his plate than the plate can hold. So down in Los Angeles some years ago, a classic case of condemnation occurred, inverse condemnation, with the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And this is called a landmark case. Landmark case. The way it worked was this. The Seventh-day Adventist Church bought a piece of ground, I think of 7 acres or so in size, with the intention of building a church on it someday. So they bought the piece of land and they made payments on it for many, many years. And as the years went by, the city council in Los Angeles, or wherever the suburb lies, where this piece of property was located, changed the zoning. The zoning was changed because they got a study in that said, well, this land is sitting in a flood zone. And because it's in a flood zone, we're going to terminate building down there because it's too dangerous. It's like building on the Mississippi River. Every once in a while, there's a flood comes through and they're unable to handle it. And so it floods people's houses. Well, one day, unbeknownst to the Seventh-day Adventists, they go tripping into the building department and they said, well, we'd like to get a building permit now. We'd like to build a building on our land. And the building department said, oh, no, you cannot build on that land. And they said, well, that's not right. You see, we bought that property. And then you turned around and rezoned it. That's an ex post facto law. And the city comes back and says, yes, but we had to make that law for the health, safety, and welfare of the public. So the Seventh-day Adventist said, well, gee, we paid $200,000 or $300,000 for the piece of property. Buy it from us. And the city said, no, we're not going to buy that property from you. We don't want it. We don't need it. Now, you bought it, you own it, and you can have picnics on it, and you can have ball games on it, and you can do all kinds of things with your property. You own it. It's your property. We're not condemning it. We're not taking it. We're not paying for it, but you can't build a building on it. So the Seventh-day Adventists took this case on up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court came back and said, you know, this is an inverse condemnation. Now, watch out for this one. When you buy a piece of property, you better go look at the zoning on it, because if it's already zoned, whatever that zoning is when you buy it is what you're going to be locked in with. But they changed the zoning on the Seventh-day Adventist property after the fact. Now, those are the distinguishing characteristics. That's an inverse condemnation. Now, inverse condemnations take many, many different forms. There are so many different forms of inverse condemnation that most people don't even recognize them. Here's one. A guy bought a piece of property down in Florida, and he wanted to build a house on this piece of property. Unbeknownst to him, this property had been zoned non-building. You can't build on it because they discovered that there was a fish. Some little fish was on this property. So it couldn't be used for building. So they wouldn't issue a building permit. And the courts came back and said, that's an inverse condemnation. Inverse condemnation. Now, once we've discovered the fish, and once this property, you know, has been zoned non-building, and then you buy a piece of property, and it's zoned, and you can't build on it because it's a floodplain. Now you've got to go back to zoning and planning and get them to rezone it. Otherwise, you can't use it for building. And if you argue that to the Supreme Court, they'll say, well, you knew or should have known that you couldn't build on it when you bought it. It's like buying a piece of property that has an easement through it. I bought a piece of property here some years back, and it had a road through it. And we don't like that road going through there. But, you know, the guy has a right to that road. That road, while it goes through my property, is his road. Now, I can graze my cattle on that road, and he can't run over my cattle or drive my cattle off of that road. But I can't prevent him from driving down that road to get to his property. That's called an easement. Now, that's a property right. And if I put a gate across that road and prevent him from using his road, that's a condemnation. I'm taking his property. Now, I could go to the man and say, look, I want to buy that road from you. I want to buy your right to go over that road from you, and I'll pay you money. And he could sell me that right away. He could sell that right away to somebody else. He can't sell the rock, the mineral, the earth, or the dirt. He does not own the dirt. But he owns a right to travel over that dirt. That's a property right. And property is what's protected by the Fifth Amendment. So when Henry Lamb writes this article, and he says in the article, remember his first paragraph, he said it's wrong, it's just plain wrong for the federal government to force private landowners not only to allow government panthers to roam on private property, but to let the panthers feast on the landowner's pets. Remember I said I disagree with that statement. I disagree with it because if you've got a wild animal, let's take deer. You know, the deer don't just stay on public land. They come over here on my farm also. The deer eat my grass. They're wild animals. I don't own those deer. I don't own the deer. The state claims to own the deer, but at the common law, the guy who owns the deer is the guy who reduces that deer to his possession. Now remember, I told you what we would do is we would talk about the pragmatic or the practical solution to this panther problem. Now, I can't tell you to go out here and kill this panther because that's against the law. Remember, the panther is protected. But let me describe for you what happened up in the Rocky Mountains, up in Wyoming. When the government put out wolves, they decided that the ranchers up there who own this right to graze were going to have to get used to grazing and using that land along with the wolves. Now, the ranchers up there were totally opposed to turning these wolves loose because they knew that these wolves would kill their calves. And they do, and they did, and they still are. But when they do, the government is supposed to pay for each one of those calves. And so this rancher up there, he had a calf that got killed, and so he came down to the, I don't know if it was a BLM, I guess, or Forest Service, whoever was running the property, and he said, well, those wolves killed my calf, and so I want you to pay for that calf. Well, you know, the government is really wild about bureaucracy, and so they said, well, fill out all these forms. So he filled out these forms, and they put it through the process, and it takes forever to get paid by the government. And then the government came back, and they said, well, wait a minute. We're not convinced that one of our wolves killed your calf. Can you prove that that wolf killed your calf? Well, I found my calf, and the carcass is half-eaten, and you turned your wolves loose. Yeah, but it could be coyotes. It could be dogs that did that. It doesn't necessarily prove that it was our wolves. See the problem you face? Now, in one jurisdiction, you may have a very sympathetic government agent who says, yes, I can see that calf has been destroyed and you've lost your property, and here, sir, here's your money. You can get into another jurisdiction, and another guy, maybe he's a greenie, he's a wolf freak, maybe he's an anti-rancher guy, and he works for the same government agency, and he hands you all these forms and puts you through all this heartache and one thing and another, and so there's your problem, see? So this rancher, he figured out that probably dealing with these government agents wasn't going to solve his problem, so he went out, and right now today you can buy some really good night vision scopes, really good ones. They're a little pricey, but I had a fellow here not too long ago, he had one, and we had a couple of coyotes. Now, he could sit in his trailer. He had a 222, that's a small bore, high power, high velocity varmint gun. And with this night scope on there, he could shoot one at about 300 yards, very accurately. He'd sit right there in the trailer and shoot him right out the window. And he killed three or four coyotes for me out here, and that was a great service. Yeah, great service. Well, anyway, this rancher did the same thing. He just went up there, and he started shooting wolves. Now, of course, if you get caught shooting these wolves, you're going to be prosecuted. See, there's a legal way to do this, and that is you put in a claim and you get paid. But sometimes the payment is a little slow, and it really amounts to an inverse condemnation. And so this rancher solved the problem by just shooting the wolves. Bang, 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 bang. Well, naturally, the wildlife biologist, you know, Bob the biologist, he doesn't have to go too far to figure out who's shooting these wolves. So he comes down here to the rancher and he says, well, you're shooting these wolves. Now, the government has the burden of proving that it was Rancher Rick that shot the wolves, in the same way that Rancher Rick has the same burden of proof to prove that it was the wolf that killed his calf. Now, this is where keeping your mouth shut and shutting up is pretty important, because government agents start asking questions and they'll say, did you shoot that wolf? Yes, I shot that wolf. That wolf killed my calf, and I shot that wolf, and that wolf needed to be shot. Okay, they got you now. Out of your own mouth, you've condemned yourself. Now, Rancher Rick didn't answer any questions. He just asked, is this a criminal investigation? Well, the agent said, well, yeah, it could be. Well, in that case, then I want to invoke my Miranda rights, and I want to remain silent. I don't want to talk to you. All of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. So either you're going to confess, or you're going to start talking, or you're going to open your big mouth. And my old daddy told me one time, he said, son, when you know something and nobody else in the world knows it, that's a secret. And when you go out here and you tell your secret to one other person, it's no longer a secret. Well, old Rancher Rick was out here shooting the government's wolves. But old Rancher Rick didn't tell anybody about that. It was his secret, and he just kept it to himself. And he didn't tell anybody about that. And they were finding these radio collars all over this guy's ranch, and so that was kind of incriminating. And so Rancher Rick, after he'd shot three or four of these radio-collared wolves, he started taking the collars off the wolves and moving them 75 or 100 miles way off down here onto the government land, you know, off out and onto the Teton Park. And then what happens is that the wolf slipped his collar, and who knows that the wolf is even dead. He just slipped his collar, and there it is. He's 75 miles away. You know, these wolves move around a lot. Now, I don't want you to get the idea that I'm advocating that you go out here and kill wolves or kill panthers, but I did want to point out to you that there are people out there who do things like that. Now, it seemed like to me that this guy with this panther problem down here in the Everglades, if he was close enough to photograph him, he was close enough to shoot him. Now, there is a thing called self-defense. Now, if you happen to be out here in the wild, now remember, self-defense is a natural right, but the burden of proof is on you to prove that you were in fear of your life. See? Now, when this panther was attacking that goat if you ran out there and you had a gun and you were banging on the side of your camper, and the cat took a step toward you, that might give you the idea that the cat was going to attack you. And if you were in fear of your life and you shot and killed the cat, see, that would be illegal. But you have to be in fear of your life. So your testimony has to be, yes, I shot the cat. I shot the cat in self-defense. I was shooting the cat in self-defense to protect my livestock. I thought the animal was going to attack me. Since I was afraid for my life, I shot and killed the cat in self-defense. You know, you have to do the same thing with people. I'll tell you a little story here. There was a Cuban guy down in Miami, and he'd been broken into several times. So one night, he's sleeping out here in his garage with a 12-gauge shotgun. And sure enough, he gets broken into, and he starts shooting blindly into the dark. And he shot and killed some kid. And of course, the prosecutor prosecuted him for wrongful death. And rightly so. See, the prosecutor is following the law. You have to be in fear for your life when you kill somebody in self-defense. And I don't think our public schools are doing us any service by trying to disarm Americans and then not tell them what the law is or how the law works. So let's understand one more little facet here. Self-defense means that you're defending yourself because you're in fear of your life. A guy pulls a knife on you, you whip out a gun. Now, with a gun, you should not be in fear of your life because that guy has a knife. Now, if you say to the guy, don't come any closer, and he keeps coming at you with a knife in his hand, you know, when that guy gets close enough with that knife, he can hurt you, can't he? So if this guy keeps coming and you shoot him, and this is what happened to this Bernard Greitz or Gretz. You know, he was attacked by four guys on the subway, and he shot these four guys on the subway, and he was prosecuted. And rightfully so. He was prosecuted because after you've shot this guy once or twice, or you got four guys and you shoot one or two of them, you don't need to shoot the other two because they're running away. So when you're shooting people in the back that are running away, you see, then that's an attack. That's not self-defense. Now, the guy in Florida was exonerated by the jury. They said, well, we're going to turn him loose. That was pretty risky. You need to turn on the lights, and then when you see who it is, you need to say, hold it right there, don't move. And if the guy turns and runs and you shoot him in the back, you see, now you're not in self-defense anymore. See where you're at? Another classic case happened out in Berkeley, California. Two kids broke into this guy's house. Now, what was going on here is that these two neighbors share a common driveway. That's fairly common when you get in a city. You got one driveway for both garages in the back of the house. And one driveway goes to the right, one goes to the left. So the distance between these two houses is probably 10, 12 feet. And one neighbor goes on vacation. He says to the other neighbor, would you watch my place? And he says, yeah, well. So the neighbor who's watching the neighbor's place over there sees it's getting broke into, and these two kids come out of the house, and he shoots and kills one of them. He's prosecuted for manslaughter. Rightfully so. The penalty for breaking and entering is not death. If he had gone out there and the kids had attacked him, he then could claim, well, I was in fear for my life, and so I shot and killed one of them in self-defense. You see, many people, I think, in America have the misconception that just because you see crime being committed that you can just take a firearm and go out here and kill people, and that's not correct. You have to be in fear of your life. And the same thing would be true here with this panther. You've got to be in fear of your life. That's a protected endangered species. The government's decided that they don't want them killed. It's like the eagles and various other animals. It's like snail darters and other little critters. It doesn't really make any difference what your opinion is or what my opinion is concerning these endangered species. Government has come along and they've said these are endangered species. We want to protect them and we've got laws to protect them. And, you know, you and I have a duty then at that point in time to practice that law. We have a duty to uphold that law, whether you like it or not. You buckle your seatbelt not because you feel like you're going to get killed today, but because that's what the law requires. And there's a lot of laws out here that we don't agree with, but, you know, that's the price you pay for civilization and civilized society. All right, now I want to run over a couple of things here. There are a lot of things that go on in life that are outrageous, but that doesn't mean that they're illegal or unlawful. Now, I told you about the Hage Ditch story. He had an inverse condemnation. He sued and won. He hasn't gotten his check yet, but at some point in time, he's going to receive a check from the government for the Pine Creek Ranch. And then he's going to leave the Pine Creek Ranch, and he's going to go live his life somewhere else. He's going to go buy a farm in Missouri, or he's going to go live in Florida. He's going to go do something. He's not going to ranch on the Pine Creek Ranch. The government's going to buy it. The government's going to own it. That's the final analysis. But he's going to get paid for it. And that's what the government didn't want to do back in 78 or 88. They didn't want to pay him for it. And that's where Mr. Shealy is. Mr. Shealy needs an action against the government agency involved here that is taking his property without compensation. And then he can leave. He can go retire in Miami. He can go do whatever he wants to do. He's not going to have a petting zoo. He's not going to own that property in the Everglades, but he's going to get paid for it. if he handles it correctly. Now, many, many, many times people are raped, robbed, and pillaged. They have their property taken away from them in admiralty actions and inverse condemnations, and all kinds of wrongs are committed against people every day. In fact, the Supreme Court of the United States estimated back in 1963 or four, in Miranda versus Arizona, that there were 40,000 police agencies. Every one of them, on average, would commit one civil rights violation per day. That's 365 per year. That's 14 million actions a year, 14 million crimes a year being committed by police officers against citizens. 14 million a year. And that doesn't count all of these condemnation actions that are going on by Ranger Ricks and biology bombs. That's in addition. That's just what the Supreme Court estimated clear back in the 1960s. So government is like a fire. You know, George Washington told us government's like a fire. You got to keep this thing contained. Our Constitution does a pretty good job. George Gordon's not complaining. One of these days, I mentioned it earlier, one of these days they're going to want to put a road through my farm. And when they do, they're going to take it. I'm not going to get in their way. I'm going to help them in every way I can. Just pay me what it's worth. And if I get paid, then I'm happy. I took you through and I showed you how to plead. These pleadings are very important. And if you plead incorrectly, you can lose your case. If your pleadings are correct, you can take it up when a lower court or a jury makes a mistake. You can take it up on appeal. And the proper place to take a federal action is the U.S. Court of Claims when you have a condemnation. And I told you about Wayne Hage. He bought a ranch. Wayne Hage is in the process of getting paid for that taking. Normally, government makes an offer, and then you can accept it or reject it. If you don't think it's a fair offer, you can go to litigation and have a jury set the amount of the value of your piece of property. And that's what Mr. Sheely can do. Now, government has a right to take your property, period. That's the end of the argument. And what they want to use it for is nobody's business but the government's, save for a couple of cases that have been decided recently in opposition to them. There are many, many ways to take property. And inverse condemnation is one of the key ways that you need to be on guard and watching for. And I told you about the Adventist Church and what happened to them. So there's the story on takings, inverse condemnations, and this thing of eminent domain. All right, we're just about out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it right there. You're listening or have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Law School, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. The number 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Well, I'm out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.